Hiya, it's April 14th, and this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where our voices change at will.
And where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked. And this is Errol Strider.
And I am Rochelle Alicia Strider, who has the good fortune to live with that crazy man. We welcome you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation, a few laughs, spiritual perspectives, and as many surprises as possible.
We have mounting surprises, but I want to let you know our time with you tonight is sponsored by Go Raw, 100% raw food that not only tastes good, but it is so good for you. It's like sprouted essence of life, traipsing through your mitochondria, being transformed into succulent energy-producing cells.
And Go Raw can be found at Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and the organic section of Costco. Go to GoRaw.com to find out where GoRaw can be found in your neighborhood. And we are very delighted tonight. We have some people at our home who are visiting us from Boulder, Colorado. Edie Gale and Robert Paulson. You may not hear them, but know that they are here with us.
Tonight, our co-sponsor for Inside Out, The Naked Truth, along with GoRaw, is coming apart at the seams. Seems is spelled S-E-E-M-S. Shall I do it again now?
Yes, go right.
Coming
ahead.
Apart at the seams. How perception and projection can muck up or clarify your life. Now, the more we look at these traits, perception and projection, the funnier and more absurd we're going to find that it is. And don't forget about assumptions. Talk about fodder for comedy and absurdity. I, for one, I assume all kinds of stuff based upon a concoction of perceptions and projections. No wonder I'm so famished. That's a Yiddish word. It means befuddled.
Or mixed up.
Or mixed up.
Or and confused.
Actually, the definition is confusing and mix up and befuddling because it has so many opportunities. But if you find yourself bewildered, that's another one, by the human dilemma, and are looking at the comic escape hatch of some metaphysical insults? Did I start to say insults?
You meant insights.
Well, maybe. Maybe I didn't. Anyway, well, you've come to the right place. And you can expect our show that we're going to talk with each other. And great, you know, we haven't talked to each other, Shell and I,
Since last week.
Not last week, but once a week. Once a week we have this
That's
opportunity.
That's why we do this show, so we can talk
right,
to each
right.
other.
I thought we did it for the big bucks, Rochelle.
No, darling.
Oh, okay.
Just so we can have conversations.
All right. And the new word that I came up with for what we may hope to discover tonight are philosophical double takes.
Philosophical double takes?
Yeah, it's like you're going along in a philosophy and somebody throws a philosophy at you, like Immanuel Kant, for example, and you do a double take. As a matter of fact, speaking of Immanuel Kant.
Oh, yes, we always speak about Immanuel
Kant. Well,
he's part of my conversation.
Come on, we're going to do some Immanuel Kant.
Let us first divide cognition into rational analysis and sensory perception, which Descartes considered valueless. Now reason gives us concepts which are true but tautological. Sensation gives us images whose content is phenomenal. Whatever greets our senses must exist in space and time, for else it would be nowhere and no when, and therefore slime. The space and time we presuppose before we sense reality must have an eight subjective transcendental ideality. The space and time are forms of our perception, whereby sensations synthesized in orderly array. The same must hold for rational conception. In everything we think, the laws of logic must hold sway. But a problem here arises with respect to natural science. While empirical in method, on pure thought it lays reliance. Although for Newton's findings, we to Newton give the glory. Newton never could have found them if they weren't known a priori. We know that nature governed is by principles immutable, but how we come to know this is inherently inscrutable. That what requires logic is a standpoint unassailable, but for objects of our senses, explanations aren't available. So let's attempt to vivisect cognition by critical analysis and hope that we may find the link between pure thought and intuition. A deduction transcendental will shed light upon the mind. Space and time are forms of apprehension, and therefore what we sense has spatiotemporal extension. Whatever is extended is composed of a plurality, but through an act of synthesis we form a commonality. If we are to be conscious of a single concrete entity, each part of its extension must be given independently, combining in a transcendental, a perceptive unity, to which I may ascribe the term self-conscience with impunity. The order of our various sensations arises from connections not beheld in sense alone. Our self creates the rules of their relations, and of this combination it is conscious as its own. While these rules correspond to scientific causal laws, the question of their constancy remains to give us pause. But once we recollect the source of our self-conscious mind, to this perverse dilemma a solution we may find. The self is nothing but its act of synthesis sublime. This act must be the same to be self-conscious over time. The rules for combination of itself would form the ground. So what we perceive tomorrow by today's laws must be bound. These constant laws whereby we shape experience are simply those which regulate our reason, that is plain. So don't ask why the stars display invariance. The cosmos is produced by your disoriented brain.
That is amazing. Where did you find that?
Looking around on the web, and I found Immanuel Kant's song. I mean, he talks more about, it's all about perception and misperception. As a matter of fact, you know who misperception? Edie, you were misperception in 1984, weren't you? She was. 83, okay. She was misperception. She was great. She wore she didn't exactly wear a bathing suit. Errol. She wore a guitar.
You're getting into bad water.
Never mind. Okay.
All right. Hit him. Anytime you can hit him, hit him.
Takes a wife to say something like that.
What was the name of that song?
The name of it was the Immanuel Kant song. And guess what?
And who sang it? Who's this amazing person who thought of it?
I'll have to find that out and get back to you. But you can go on YouTube and find that guy. It was really fun. I'd like to get the lyrics off and be able to reference them more particular. But anyway, what are your initial thoughts tonight about the whole issue of perception? And the other night you talked about projection, what people do with all that.
The one thing I know about perception is that's all we've ever got. I mean, that's it. We don't really have anything other than perception. What we see from our eyes and what we hear through our ears is our perception. And you can see the same thing and have a totally different perception of it. And I think that's why I titled that book that I wrote called One Woman's View of the Elephant. You know that story of the five blind guys. You know, they each saw a part of the elephant. I mean, felt a part of the elephant with their hands. And since they couldn't see the whole elephant, they needed each other in a way to come to the whole elephant by talking about it's got this thing and it's got that thing.
It has a long, trunky-like thing.
Yeah.
And it's got a big butt.
Right. And as they put it all together, of course, a picture of the elephant emerged.
They had all the parts in the wrong places.
It even doesn't matter.
His ears were next to his right leg.
But what I'm saying is that if everyone shares their perception, we get a greater idea of what the whole looks like.
Or we get infinitely more distortion. Because it depends. No, really.
You don't get infinitely more distortion.
Well, yeah, because these perceptions, they kind of bump into each other and they confuse each other. And some feel like they have to be dominant otherwise.
Oh, well, that's a whole other story. I'm talking about just sharing it. I'm not talking about making your perception the only perception. Once we realize that we have a perception, our perception is all we've got. And your perception is all you've got. If we share our perception with each other, we have twice as much perception. And then if more people share their perception, we have even more perception. And if we realize that we don't have to let go of our perception, we just have to be willing to allow other people to add to it so that we get a greater perception of the whole.
Can you use the word, like the P word? Because perception is like so many syllables that they keep repeating. Anyway, P word.
What's the P word?
Perception.
I just said perception.
Exactly. The P word.
What are you talking about?
Here we have perception run amok. You know, challenges to perception is just existence itself. Now, for example, I probably exist, but I'm not sure since what I was yesterday is no longer here today. So, how can I be sure that what I am today will be around tomorrow? It probably won't. If yesterday's me is not only transient, but in fact dissolves with the passing of time, I must be dissolving now. So life is a process of dissolution. Probably. Now, you probably exist, but you won't be around forever, at least not so I'd notice. So, do I operate on the assumption that you probably won't exist since you probably won't? Or on the probability that you will since you do exist now? How can I base my life on these probabilities? Are there no certainties, no definites to light my way? Must I live in perplexity, never being able to count on anything for sure? Where does that leave me? Will I probably or probably not exist? That is the question. But doesn't probability only apply to the future? I mean, the word itself is like a future word in that you never think of probability in the present. In all probability, probability won't exist in the future. Or maybe it probably will. But in the now, it definitely does not have any meaning. Huh. It only has meaning in the future, and since the future is at best only probable, we can't count on it. This means that I can dismiss the whole concept of probability and just be here in the moment. The only place I can feel secure about my existence. Yay! And leave probabilities to those who try to second guess what might be. At least, I think that's what they probably would do.
That was fun.
All right. Here we go.
Oh, that was fun. What's here we go? Where are we going?
Speaking of probabilities.
It ain't necessarily so.
It ain't necessarily so.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. Little David was small, but oh my. He fought big Goliath, who laid down and died. Little David was small, but oh my. Oh, Jonah, we lived in a whale.
Oh, Jonah, we
He made his home in that fish's abdomen. Old Jonah, he lived in the whale. Little Moses was found in a stream.
Little Moses was found in a stream.
He floated on water till old Pharaoh's daughter, she fished him, she says, from that stream. It ain't necessarily so.
It ain't necessarily so.
They tell all the children the devil's a villain, but it ain't necessarily so. To get into heaven, don't snap for a seven. Live clean, have no faults. Take the gospel whenever it's possible, but with a grain of salt. Methuselah lived 900 years.
Methuselah lived 900 years.
But who calls that living when no gal will give in to no man what is 900 years? I'm preaching this sermon to show it ain't necessary.
It ain't necessarily so. From Porgy and Bess.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, that was the music of George Gershwin. Did his brother Ira write that song? I mean, write the lyrics?
Yeah.
For that musical?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, he talks about, you know, take everything with a grain of salt, you know, about perception. And we are offering a grain of salt as a special gift to our call-in listeners. But it's not just an ordinary grain of salt. It's a grain of salt that is especially for the purpose of kind of taking a little bit of like, yeah, that's absolutely true out of everything you perceive. Grain of salt. Just take it all with a grain of salt. Do you know what that means, that expression?
You take it very little.
Oh, take it very little. Well, that's how interesting. See, I see the grain of salt expression. This could be our word for the night, or three words.
Okay.
Because to me, it represents, in this context, somebody says it, and it's an interesting metaphor when you think about where did that come from, grain of salt, to describe the experience of someone going, Oh, you see how the grain of salt was in my voice?
Well, I don't see it that way, but that's okay. You can see it that way. Since we're talking about perception. But just see how small a grain of salt is? Have you ever seen a grain of salt?
Well, I...
Very tiny.
Yeah.
Very, very tiny. You need a microscope, almost. One tiny little grain of salt. You almost never get a tiny grain of salt. You get a whole bunch of salt to put on stuff.
You know, now that you mention it, I have never seen a single grain of salt.
Well, you can imagine then, a grain of salt is not taking it very seriously because you can't even see it.
Wow. See, that just stretched me right back around inside myself, and I came out the other end knowing less.
You know what?
What?
You don't look that much different coming out the wrong side.
Really? But you haven't seen my back. See, that's where the changes took place.
Oh, no, but I did see your back. Before you sat down, I saw it.
Now, that's an interesting...
But now, did it change?
My back?
Well, now that you're sitting and all I can see is your front, is your back there?
Yeah, this is like, okay. Speaking of perception and your back...
My back? I thought
anybody's
back. Your back.
Anybody's back. Okay, it's like you have this part of you that's so apparent and like so exposed and so everybody can see, often is not as much as your front. And yet to you, you rarely ever see it other than a few times I've looked in the mirror. And even then, it's hard to see. No one's really ever taken a picture of the whole backside of me. I think that would be interesting. Maybe we should do that. And then I could see that part of me that other people see all the time. Talk about two different realities.
But you realize, too, that before mirrors, you couldn't see the front of you either.
Well, you had the pool, but you didn't know who that was. Remember, you talk about appearance. You go down, you look in that pool, and you go, look there. Who is that? Jeez.
There's a person in the water.
And then the guy next to you, imagine this first insight. The guy next to you, and he's talking about doing a double take. He's like looking at this image in the water, and he's looking at the guy next to him, and he looks at himself kind of moving. He looks at this other thing moving his head. And he's like, oh, my gosh. Oh, my, is that? Is that what I look like? Oh, my gosh. Gosh, let's go eat a raw rodent or something to celebrate. What a moment.
Yeah, and the moment when you realize that it was you. I mean, because it's not just like if you looked in the water, you might have thought there was somebody in the water looking back at you.
That's what I mean, that moment where that connection was made. And how many times must have been made in the early stages of human development?
And it was a perception, no matter what. It was still a perception.
Right.
Because not only that, but you're looking through water, and the water, if it rippled, you know, you'd be all rubbly and mubbly and everything.
Rubbly and mubbly. That's the word for tonight.
Mubbly.
Mubbly. Mubbly. We always try and achieve new word exposure. And so that's why we like mubbly. It's like, you know, the last time I saw mubbly was like, I don't know. I was like,
you never saw mubbly. No, because mublies do not appear before people.
Really?
Yes, that's what the whole thing about a mubbly is.
You can
smell. You can't even smell them.
You can't smell them, mubbly.
You can't smell them, you can't hear them, and you can't see them.
Wow.
They have to take mublies on faith.
Whoa. Faith, huh? Just talk about that. Okay.
What am I talking about here?
This is an electron dialogue. This is another way of looking at how it could be. And I guess I'll play scientist number one, and Rochelle will play scientist number two in the electron dialogue, and let's see where they go. I'm going to do it in my character, Wilhelm von Hofenstaufen. Okay, here we go. The electron is the smallest particle in existence.
And how do you know that?
Through experiments.
Uh-huh. Can you see it?
No.
Yeah. Then how do you know it?
Because we can take measurements that suggest its existence and its size.
But you can't see it.
No.
Why?
Because it's too small.
It's too small to see, but you think it's there, huh?
That's right.
Well, I've got news for you.
What?
There's something smaller.
No, there isn't.
Yes, there is.
How do you know that?
Through measurement.
But can you measure it directly?
No.
Then you can't be sure, can you?
Pretty sure.
But not absolutely sure.
Not absolutely.
Then it may not be the smallest thing.
It may not, but that's unlikely.
Huh. Huh. Where do we go from here?
Well, we could build a better microscope.
Ah, but what if we find something that's too small for our new microscope?
Then we'll just have to operate on faith.
Faith? But that's preposterous. Faith in what?
Our measurements.
But that's not faith. That's for certain.
It is.
Sure, all our measurements indicate that the electron is the smallest particle in existence.
Huh. Is that a fact?
Ba-dum, ba-dum, bum, bum.
That's silly.
Well, here's the thing about it, though. Nothing is as it seems.
There are whispers in the air that tell us stories of our wildest dreams that leave us empty in despair, but on our own. So everything is as it seems now. With the dark comes a harsher light, and you can't shake the shadow above that's following you up into the night. Paint your face on with a smile and say to them, don't worry, carry on just for a while. You'll get lost and hurry. Can you see now that nothing's as it seems somehow?
right. Or at least that's how it sounds right. When the dark comes a harsher light. And you can't shake the shadow above that's following you well into the night. Paint your face on with a smile and say to them, don't worry, carry on just for a while. You'll get lost and hurry. Can you see now that nothing's as it seems somehow? When you don't know how much is enough or will get in the way, and you can only bear your soul when you think that this is your day. When it's not and you get shot, you wish for someone else's luck, but you can't do nothing, so you must be doing something. Don't you know what it's like to disappear from someone else's life? So you can't paint your face down with a smile and say to them, don't worry, carry on just for a while. You'll get lost and hurry. Can you see now? Can you see now? Can you see now that nothing's as it seems somehow?
What a great message. That was by Gordy, G-O-R-D-I.
Gordy with a G?
Yeah.
And what's it called?
Nothing's as it seems.
Nothing as it seems.
It's very freeing to realize that nothing as it seems. It can be scary if you're desperately holding on to what you perceive because you're holding on to it for dear life. Somehow you believe that your perception and the information it's giving you is accurate, and you depend on that. And if you're shown a different perception,
and like this, I don't like your different perception. I like to keep the perception that I had in my own perception way from the beginning.
Well, but that takes us back to everything I always talk about in terms of maturity and immaturity or evolution of the species. I think we're more inclined to want to hold on to our perceptions and make them the only perceptions when we're immature. And I think that's what implies maturity, is when we allow other people's perception into our world. To me, that is a sign, maybe the first sign of maturity.
Okay.
Is that we allow other people's perceptions to stand with ours.
Yeah.
And to enlarge our perception as a result of it. And I just don't think you can do that when you're really little, because you've got a very narrow framework.
I understand that. But even to hold the door open for the other person's perceptions, and you go, you first. Yeah, go ahead. I think that would be a very sweet thing. A bunch of people coming up with their perceptions, bumping up against each other, and they're saying, that's okay. You go ahead. You first. You let your perception out and be the one that's seen.
I wrote this thing down as we were talking and listening to all this music. I thought of honest perception. What's an honest perception as opposed to just any perception?
It's innocent perception. That's why Yeshua recommends three major practices, spiritual practices that I learned through the teachings of Yeshua from the Glenda Green books. One of them is innocent perception, where we see things for the first time. And the insight I had about that is all that is the all-beingness of essence that from which we emerge provides the soil for what is seen. And all essence sees everything for the first time. Can you imagine?
Yes, I can imagine. I think that's what acting does when you're on the stage. You can't take yesterday's performance with you. You're there for the first time. You've never done this before. This is the moment that you're in it. Every line that you speak, you've never spoken before. And good actors can do that. I mean, that's what they do. Any performer can do that. And athletes do it too. If they think about what they did before, they'll get stuck. But if they're just right there in the moment, as if they've never been there before, and rely on all the skills and talent they have, they know it'll be there for them, and then do it. And I think to me that's the closest thing to innocent perception, practicing innocent perception constantly, our performers and athletes for the most part.
I agree with you. And what that brings up for
me. He agrees with me.
Well, everybody. Yeah, it's not without possibility. But speaking of perception, this is a poem I wrote that I think begins to look at what's behind perception, especially as we face one another. This is a poem. It's called Will We Pass By? Will you pass by and not notice me going on your routine way with the frigidity of indifference? Will you pass unnoticed by me, camouflaged by sameness, covered over by too many rejections? Will we pass by each other acting as if we didn't exist, retarded by familiarity? Will you pass by and glance at me, capturing my gaze with your twinkle? Or pull back into bleary shudders? Will you pass and I not see you there, afraid you'll misinterpret my hand reaching out to touch? Will we pass over the possibilities inherent in our coming so close, though it seems we're strangers to each other? Will you pass me by and not see me at all as you make toward your ultimate goal, even with no one beside you? Will you pass through the field of my vision and make no sounds for fear I might notice you there? Will we pass the moment of ecstasy, which we could share if we stopped long enough to pass something to each other?
I know who wrote that.
Who?
You.
I did.
We're talking about perceptions a lot, and then we talked about perception and projection and assumptions. And we started with perceptions is how you perceive life. You know, you look at it. But then what is a projection? You know, do you project your perceptions? What do we project?
Well, you're projecting, among other things. And we have a variety of things tonight for available for your projection. One is your history and the memory of how you experienced that history, and you just project it, otherwise slap it on the person who reminds you of that ugly encounter with life.
A projection in many ways is a false perception gone awry.
I love that. A false perception gone awry. And when it goes awry, it's like it keeps going left. It never stops going left. I never knew that about awry. The awry is continually going left. But listen to this story. There was a woman, we lived in Fairfax, and she came up to me one day in some event where we were all there, and she said, I have to tell you something. When I first saw you here, in this town, you reminded me so much of this horrible person in my life who stole my money and betrayed me, and I couldn't be with you. You were that guy. And I have to apologize because I've always had, since I've been here, this very negative reaction to you because you reminded me so much of this person that caused me so much pain. And she says, you know, I'm letting it go, and that's part of why I'm telling you this, but I just thought that was a very interesting thing to have some communication about it. Think of all the times we pass by each other and make these assumptions and do all these projections. I can almost see like these little cartoon characters that they blow out a projection, like my mother, and then it's like a bubble that goes, sprays out of this little cartoon character who looked like themselves before all of a sudden twists and becomes your mother and says things to you.
Well, that's true, and that's what they talk about in relationships, that people meet each other and they project this whole history onto them as a result of their past, and the person doesn't have a chance. I mean, they're doomed. That's it, because you really cannot escape a projection if it's being thrown at you. There's nothing you can say or do. Only time might be able to dissolve the perception, the projection. Like this woman, only time, as she got to know you, the projection that she put upon you began to fade, and who you were took center stage. The projection faded into the background. So time can do that, but in the beginning, you were doomed.
Uh-huh.
I mean, our projection was much stronger than the reality of who you were.
But you said there's no way to do about it. But you can learn projection jujitsu. And it teaches you how to basically jujitsu the perception when it was becoming at you, the projection. And perception jujitsu teaches you how to recognize when it leaves the sender. You get so quick. And you see it coming to the center, and projection jujitsu causes you just to kind of pivot.
That's like Aikido.
Aikido, that's what I was trying to think of. I couldn't think of it, the word, but
that's
thank
okay,
you.
That's okay, because you had a perception of it that was not right.
Okay, here's another arena. Talk about perception and putting on appearance. It has to do with relationships. Men and women, what's true and what's not true for them.
When we're around with other folks, you smile at me, you love my jokes. We're such a happy couple, you and I.
And when we're walking down the street, you hold my we're only
keeping up appearances, hiding all our loneliness, fooling everyone but us with lies. It seems we're tied together, mortis, with a strange unhappiness, keeping up appearances when we should say goodbye.
When friends are near, you put on quite a show.
And you don't do so bad yourself at keeping them from finding out.
And why we even bother, we don't know.
We're only
keeping up appearances, hiding all our loneliness, fooling everyone but with lies. It seems we're tied together more or less, with a strange unhappiness, keeping up appearances when we should say goodbye.
That was Amber Digby.
Amber Digby.
Amber Digby. I love that little style of music. And what it had to say.
What's the name of it?
It was called Keeping Up Appearances. So there we are. Why would you keep up an appearance? For example, if you're a couple and you're not getting along, what
do you... I
have
another take on that.
Oh, okay.
I have a take. If you create an appearance, why can't it be real?
That's not a take it for granted. That's a real other take.
That's a real other take.
Okay.
In other words, so they're out in public and everybody's looking at them as this happy couple, right? But when they're alone, all that goes away. Well, what's real? But when they're alone and they're not getting along, or when they're out there and everyone thinks they're this perfect couple? If they can do that in public, why can't they do it in private?
That is so good. I love that. Could you remember the recipe for that line? Because it's so good, I want to have it again.
The recipe?
For that line. You know, the words you put in and the syllables.
You'll have to listen to the rebroadcast.
Right. And the intonations. That was good. That's why I love doing this show, which is Inside Out. It's the naked truth. You're with us. We are with you.
We're coming to you live from Lupin Lodge. I've discovered that we're not really in the Los Gatos Hills. We're in the Santa Cruz Mountains and the Lexington Hills.
Wow.
I know.
Does that mean we have to erase all the last programs
no,
we did?
No, but you could also say that it's the Los Gatos Hills, but actually on the map, it's the Lexington Hills and the Los Gatos Mountains.
I'm open to change.
Santa Cruz Mountains. How open are you, my
darling?
Let me think.
See, that's the other thing. When we get to the question of the openness of us, let me bring in Sir Reginald Periwinkle to talk about that. Welcome, Sir Reginald. I'm so glad you brought me here to talk about the openness, because I rather find that many individuals, especially men, as I encounter them across the world, as I've traveled so much, I was in India for several years, and before they moved me on to Borneo and right back here in jolly old England, but I've noticed as I travel around the world that many of these people are not as open as you would think, and I rather noticed that they remain very closed. And those are my remarks about that.
Sir Reginald, as you perceive them, what makes you think they're not open?
Well, what I think is that I watch people very closely, and I see someone sending a communication across the room or on the sidewalk or something, and I see that communication actually is a waveform traveling from one person to another. It's a unique gift that I have that I was given. Thank you, we have a divine source of unique gifts. Thank you. Anyway, I see the communication traveling. There you go. And I see the person deflected. Especially this is true when someone is trying to give someone else a compliment or an affirmation when that person doesn't believe they deserve it. Up! Deflection there, I'll say. And what follows deflection? Right behind it is projection.
Behind it is projection, or does the projection comes up before the deflection?
I think the projection is what sets the deflection off. It's like the powder and the gun, and then deflection is the cannonball, and it's the projection. It's the gentleman I've actually seen them light that cannon, and it just projects the projectile, and the projectile lands on whomever it is aimed at, if you have a good aim.
Sir Reginald,
yes.
Would you say you were open?
I would say I'm open under the circumstances at which I feel I am safe.
Ah, so that may be that we're open when it feels safe, we're not open when it doesn't, which seems very normal to me. I mean, because the closed part of us is a protective safety net. It's a protection. It keeps us safe, just like you said, and I said that 3 times. I'll not say it again.
All right. While you're not saying it again, just to go back to our theme, we're talking about, as things seem, as opposed to as they are. So that's where we're headed. Anytime we're headed there, as soon as this song comes up in the frozen computer.
We have to get all these people on stage, bring them into our house.
Wait. It froze up. because there is an hourglass that has appeared on my board. And there's a sign that comes up, and it says, adapter problem. It really says that. And then it goes on to say, yeah, you are not adapting as well to life as you could be adapting, because we saw you puffing up your ego in front of several conversations this last week. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just this last week?
Well, all the time. And you know how we catch them? There's a line from A Course in Miracles, which I'm just amazed at how often I am the poster boy for this line. It says, the ego transforms situations into forms of praise for itself in order to overcome its doubts. So just the other day, I saw myself do a puffer-upper. That's when you say something that puffs you up in your appearance to other people, right?
Uh-huh.
And then I looked and I said, what are your doubts? What are you doubting here? Well, why would you need to puff yourself up? And I could feel a little boy in me go, well, because they might not see me. Oh, okay, so you're scared they won't see you? No, if they don't see me, I get really nervous. I don't think
you're not there.
I try and I lose my bearings, and I don't like to lose my bearings. It's real scary when you look in every possible direction, and it's like you have no basis for making a decision. That's really scary.
Poor darling, I'm so sorry that you had to have that feeling. You know what I have discovered? When my perceptions don't mean anything, but I do, then I know I exist. In other words, it's like the perceptions are just an outgrowth of who I am, but I exist without them. And that to me is wonderful. That to me is like a sense of a freedom, because I don't have to project anything onto anybody out of those perceptions to know that I am. Therefore, there's no fear that I won't be.
Well, that's very freeing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's very freeing. And you can have it, too.
You can have it, too. And here's how you get it. You just call into our toll-free number, 488-5078, and we will give you a dose of, well, our new product. It's called As It Seems, which you can apply on your projections.
What I didn't want to know, and I saw where I didn't want to go, so I took the path less traveled on, and I let my stories be whispered when I'm gone. When I'm gone, when I'm life, you must find something to live for. 'Cause when the darkness comes a-calling, you go back to where you were before. 'Cause this life is as fragile as a dream, and nothing's ever really as it seems. As it seems. As it seems. But the way that he looked at me made me feel alive. And now I know nothing at all but the release that comes when you in me fall. In me fall. In me life, you must find something to live for. 'Cause when the darkness comes a-calling, you go back to where you were before. 'Cause this life feels as fragile as a dream, and nothing's ever really as it seems. As
That was Lily Kershaw. Guess what the name of that song was?
As It Seems.
Very good.
Oh, I'm so bright.
You get the award tonight. It's such a profound subject because it has so many dimensions. It's like you can go on forever around projection. Oh, we did mention briefly assumptions. Now, that's part of that triumvirate of perception, projection, and assumptions. Think of how many assumptions we make about what we think is going to happen if we do X, or what's going to happen if we do Y. So I immediately have an assumption. Well, if I do Y, I assume that they will do the whatever. And here's the paradox.
The thing that you to realize is there's a very strong motivation for that, to be in control.
Survival? Are you talking survival?
Yes, survival. If you don't have an assumption, you could lose everything. I assume that this is going to happen and that's going to happen. It's taking care of everything. It's like very much you stay in control that way. If you don't assume anything, I mean, what? What? Where's the ground that you're walking on? It all gets very scary.
Yeah. That's why we have this new product now that's come out on the market. It's called Faith Atrail. And what it does, you kind of slap it on your that part of you that's down below that looks like it doesn't end when you don't have your assumptions. It looks scary as hell. You're looking over the cliff of your emptiness going on forever with multiplied by despair. Hume, not a pretty sight. That's why we have Faith Atrail. And Faith Atrail is a way of covering your all that over with this trail of supple and ingenious little creatures that keep lifting you up and providing spring in your step, even on those days when you're trotting through life.
Oh, my God. I hope we're selling that at a decent price so everybody can get it.
Just call us here now. Call the time-free number. We used to have a toll-free number, but we realized it was people's time was harder to get. So we've got a time-free number. You call this number. It's an instant number, and it'll instantly connect you to what's instantaneously manifesting itself in the most present reality of the all instantaneousness as it flies.
Thank you, Mr. Strider.
Absolutely. Yeah, you heard it here.
Instantaneously as it flies. I like it. I like it. I like it. What I'm also learning that I share with you every now and then when I think you're listening. Anyway.
Are there times I'm listening? Next week we're going to talk about the times she thinks I'm listening and the times when I'm really listening and see if they match.
I wouldn't wait till next week.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's enough of that.
What was I going to say?
I have no idea. I do wonder, we've only got a few minutes left, and we're talking about perception, its relationship,
projections, and assumptions.
And the assumptions and how we depend on those assumptions. And yet, going back to, I think, the key lesson that I'm getting tonight is out of this is this whole thing about innocent perception. We were talking about it last night, too, our friends Edie and Robert, who are with us. And
unfortunately, we don't have microphones, so I would love to hear.
Yeah.
I would
if
love
we had microphones,
to hear.
You could see them. Should they say hi, everybody? But
what, Errol?
Well, what I was just saying was the about the was the about the was the
innocent
about the,
perceptions.
Thank you. Was the about oh yes, innocent perception. That's where you minimize assumptions in any given situation, and I think that's a quote unquote spiritual practice of as you recognize your assumptions rearing their head up.
Oh
to,
my God, you scared me.
To cover up what's before you, you kind of go, and you come back just a little bit and ask yourself, well, what would happen if I just brought that assumption down about 6 inches and saw some direct reality?
I could see over it.
You could. It's true.
I'm a petite woman. I was in a delicatessen the other day trying to get some meat, and strangely enough, they had a petite salesperson behind the counter, and we couldn't see each other. Oh, it's almost like we had to bend down and see each other through the glass above the meat. And I just started laughing so much. You know, it was hesitant at first, and then she got it. You know, she just saw the humor in it as well as I did. And the two of us were just laughing so much. You know, what's really funny is we had a misperception of our own ability to see each other.
It's a visual. I love it. I can hardly wait to go public with that scene. Come on now. We're going to film it. Here's what I want to suggest, though, as we close up. Give it a try. Take a couple moments out of your day and say, okay, I'm going to wipe the slate clean. I'm going to clear away my past, my assumptions, my projections, my perceptions, and just make myself available to what wants to show up in my face. In order for that to happen, what do we need to remind these people of, Rochelle?
We need to remind us that resistance is what you add to pain to make it hurt. Forget it. I can't
last
remember any
longer
and hurt more.
And hurt more.
Whoops. And, don't ever do that to me again.
And there, oh, my God. Not on that note. Thank you, Go Raw.
Whoops. Thank you.
Bye.
Good night,
Loving
Errol.
You.